Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons and other podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or any popular podcasting platform. Join us on our Sunday worship times at 9 a.m. and 10:45 a.m. This week, Pastor Russ brings us a sermon titled, The Unlit Candles of Christmas, from John 1, 1 through 9.
In the beginning was the Word.
That's how John 1 opens. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. These are the words we gather around at the end of Advent, and I wanted to start with them this morning for that reason. I wanted to start with where we hope to end when we gather around this same Advent wreath and these candles, and they will all be lit, and we'll be lighting the candle that's in the middle, the Christ candle. We'll be saying these words: He was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through Him, and without Him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in Him was life, and the life was the light of all people. And then the verse that I'm hoping we'll use as a memory verse for ourselves this month, out of verse 5, where it says, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it." This curious part that follows: there was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light, the true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. This is the verse that we gather around. This is the truth that we proclaim. This is what we hope to get to on Christmas Eve, when, if you're here for the appropriate service, you'll be holding a candle and it will be lit, and this whole room will be aglow with the lights of candles. But before we do that, I want to get to the other truth, that when we think about Christmas, many of us could say, "I like Christmas, but..." I found myself in several different meetings in the last four to six weeks. And one way or another, this theme has come up about, what are we looking forward to at Christmas time? What are we hoping for? What is the work of Christmas? And more than I can count, this phrase in one way or another has come into being: "I like Christmas, but I don't have the time or the energy or the money to celebrate right now. I don't feel very merry." The Eastman started us off that way this morning in terms of there are things we're thankful for, and then there are the things that are the holes in our bucket that are draining us. Particularly true at Christmas, when the volume of all that gets turned up. "I like Christmas, but it's going to be hard this year because we are missing someone who was here last year, but they've passed, they've left, they're not here. I like Christmas, but I dread it." More than a few people said that. "I dread it because of the division that's in my family, the alienation, the anxiety over the conflicts that might be there." And more than a few have said, "I like Christmas, I like the lights, I like the music, but I avoid it. I avoid it because of some of the painful ghosts of the past and past Christmas and growing up." So this morning, I wanted to start talking about the unlit candles of Christmas. Advent and Christmas is a time of light and of candles, but it's not automatic. The candles of Christmas wait. You have to choose to light them. And what's true for our tables, our hearts, our sanctuaries, is even more true for the light that's in here that is waiting to shine. It is a choice. And it's not automatic, and it's not just as simple as flipping on a switch. There is work to be done, and that's the work that we call Advent. It is a lead up. We don't light candles. We don't light candles because of all the things that are there. We don't light candles because of the presence already of hope and of peace and of joy and of love. We tend to light candles in Advent for what is not there, what is absent. It is what we're longing for. It's what we're hoping for. It's into a world that can say, "I like all that goes around with Christmas, but boy, I'm not there yet." And I'm not sure I'm even going to get there. I don't know if I'm going to be able to light those candles out of anything other than just tradition and practice from the past. I don't know if there's anything in me that's going to light them. This morning in an article, one author said, was touting the good work of Advent when she said to practice Advent is to lean into an almost cosmic ache. An almost cosmic ache, our deep wordless desire for things to be made right and the incompleteness we find in the meantime. In the meantime, because we dwell in a world still racked with conflict, violence, suffering, and darkness. And to just go to the joy of Christmas, just to try to ramp up the merriness that's of the season that we hope will also be a part of our life, seems tone deaf at best. It seems to be unrealistic. I like Christmas, but there is a cosmic ache that is going on that we had better pay attention to. Otherwise, Christmas is just a distraction. It's an evasion. It's a way of avoiding the real world, not engaging it, complete opposite of what the incarnation is all about. I like Christmas, but there is a cosmic ache. Earlier this summer, I got to spend time around table. There was an exchange student from Iraq. There was two of them, and we were having dinner with a whole group of people, and it was a wonderful exchange, and it was part of what we hope for in this world, is people exchanging ideas and thoughts, and one was from Kurdistan, and was an exchange student staying with the Barkledges for a couple weeks, and this last week sent a text talking about what is going on in the crackdowns and in the protests. Said 267 people have either been killed or wounded, and in his own way, as he's finding somebody dropped, one of the security police dropped their own ID, and it was from another country, and the word that is out, and he's talking about that Molotov bombs are being thrown at them. Snipers appeared again yesterday. They have direct orders of killing all the protesters, and they don't care how many. And then he says, it's not a protest anymore, it's a massacre. I like Christmas, but there's this cosmic ache. I have a friend in England who lives in London and was lamenting on Facebook just this week. Name's Tony, and he was talking about, he says, twice in the last couple years, acts of terrorism have happened right on his front door or in his neighborhood. And lamenting, what is it? And you can't even go out, and it's scary. I like Christmas. But there's this cosmic ache of the world as it's supposed to be and the world as it is, and that's a big, giant gap in this world, isn't there? And whether it's the protesters and the violence in Hong Kong, whether it's the floods and the natural disasters in so many places around the world, whether it's the hunger that permeates, or whether it is just the ache that's within us, if we just try to gin up the Christmas machine and all the merriness without paying attention to that, we have missed the entire point of Christmas. It's not supposed to be an escape from the world. It's an invitation to engage in it. So this same author was able to say, Advent holds a space for our grief, and it reminds us, all of us, in one way or another, that we're not only wounded by the evil in the world, we're also wielders of it, contributing our own moments of unkindness or impatience or selfishness. There is a reason that when we light these candles here, the first one we light is hope. Because there is the world as it is and the world as we hope, as we want it to be, as it should be, and what holds those two things together is hope. And the first candle that we have to decide if we need to light this year, as every year, is will we light a candle called hope? Will we invest in, when will we do that work of hope? When I do a workshop called Grief in the Holidays, and there's a quote that I often use from an author named Andrew Greeley, and he's just talking about the great question around hope, and I'm going to paraphrase most of it. Because what he talks about, he says, it's really, on the one hand, there is this question about hope. Maybe hope is just this last vestige of evolution that doesn't make any sense. Maybe it's a cruel trick of the universe where we hope when we have no business in hoping. He says, or maybe it's more than that. It is either that, or perhaps it is what he called a rumor of angels. He says the decisive religious question, maybe the only religious question, is whether hope is grounded in something that's real or whether it's just wishful thinking. Maybe it is a version of the appendix. That's kind of that vestige of, we don't know why it's there anymore, and it's sometimes more hassle than it's worth, and sometimes it's even dangerous. Or maybe it's an inner GPS of the soul, which when we get lost is pointing us to something that's deeper, that's truer, about what it means to be human and what it is. One of the best insights we have into what human life is all about is what he said. So that's the question on this first Sunday of Advent. What are we going to do with this candle of hope? We can light it just out of tradition. We can light it out of practice. Or we can choose to light it one more time for ourselves, for our families, for our community, for our world. It is a work that needs to be done. And so the unlit candle of Christmas is hope. Hope. And in that hope, we wait. We started this morning's service with this part of the Psalm 130, I wait for the Lord. I wait. My soul waits. Because the work of hope is to wait. In this word, in his word, I hope. In his word, which is promising something new, promising a day when there will be no more tears, when there will be no more sorrow, when there will be no more grief, there will be no more hunger, when death will just be a rumor and a memory. When all things are brought together and there is unity and union in Christ, I wait, and in that I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning. In those days, the night watchman was the ones who would sit on the gates of the city, and they would watch because at night was the terror time. You didn't know what was coming, and you always had to post people to watch in case somebody was trying to get in or there was enemies outside. And it was always a relief, finally, when the sun would start to come across. The words dawn, I'll get there. When the sun would dawn, and it was like, oh, now we can see again, and there was relief. I wait more than those who watch for the morning. More than those who watch for the morning, I wait. But the waiting is more. It is more than just in the word. It is in the act, the witnessing of that light. And so we have that curious part in our passage this morning about there was a man sent from God whose name was John. John the Baptist. John the Baptist has a history that when you learn about him, he shows up in these odd places in the New Testament. He's always there at the beginning. All four of the Gospels talk about him. He was the religious rock star of his day. He was so much that people felt like we need to explain John the Baptist, because John the Baptist lived with such a purity of vision and purpose, a clarity of his own vision. He lived with such an urgency of his own task that somehow when he spoke, people said, that's the one, that's the guy, that's the guy we've been waiting for. And there was followers around there. And so if you watch, you'll notice this in all the Gospels and again in the book of Acts, because it comes up again. People are following John, and they have to go out of their way saying, no, John wasn't the light of the world. He was witnessing to the light. He was the one who was pointing to it. He's not the Messiah. He was the one who was the forerunner. And they go to great lengths because there was great confusion. Because here's the problem. Two of them. When someone has that kind of clarity, when somebody has that kind of vision, when someone has that kind of urgency, there's a name for them. Crazy. Because that's what they thought of John. He was this crazy guy who couldn't stand to live in the world as it was in between that gap of what it should be. But it was also the other biblical word is prophet. And too often they're one and the same. To have that kind of clarity in a world as it is and be able to say, but I see what it's supposed to be, people will think you're nuts. But here's the other problem. Here's the real problem for John. He did that so well that people mistook him for the light. People mistook him for the one he was pointing to. People saw his life. They said, ah, that's it. That's what this is going to look like. I think there are worse epithets at the end of your life going, this person lived their life so much that people kept confusing them with the light of the world. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Wouldn't that be a wonderful testimony for our own lives? That we lived in such a way that the goodness, the compassion, the mercy, the justice, the love of God was so evident in our life that we had witnessed to it in such a way that people could say, that looks like Jesus to me. That looks like the light of the world to me. And wouldn't it be wonderful if somebody had to come alongside and say, no, that's just someone pointing to it. That's just a witness for it. So what do we do? How do we choose to light the candle of hope? Can I give you three things quickly as just applicational? How do we live that kind of a life? And one of them is this. I hope that you will memorize this verse. This will be our memory verse for this month. It's short. You probably know most of it already. You could probably say it just by closing your eyes. But the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. I think this is a powerful verse, not only for now, but anytime you are particularly feeling overwhelmed, particularly when you don't know what to do next, it is good to hear this verse, that the light came into the world, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. You can pick up cards with that memory verse on the way out at the welcome table. And I hope you'll do so, and I hope you'll commit that to memory as part of how we do this. But the second thing is then I hope that you will begin to notice the appearing of God. I hope that you will begin to see where the light of the world is breaking in into the actions of other people. Because when we begin to note, look, that's where God's breaking in. Look, there's someone who's witnessing with their life. There's someone who is reflecting that light. When we begin to see that, it changes the way we see the world, even in the dark places. But it also begins to help us to see that possibly, maybe we could do the same. So I'm going to invite you either by journaling it down at the end of a day or at the beginning of your next day, or maybe in your conversations around the dinner table, who are the people? Did you see somebody this week with compassion who is exercising compassion in this world and go, you know what? That looks just like Jesus. That's the compassion of God that's emerging, that's shining. Maybe you saw, and maybe you were part of that group of people who were at the Turkey Rock Trot this Thanksgiving day and raising money for those who are hungry. We have a name for people who do that on days like that. We call them crazy too. But we also say, look, that looks like Jesus to me. That kind of compassion, that kind of concern, that kind of generosity of spirit and time, that looks like God to me. I noticed that. Or when you see a group of people who are grieving, and they're gathering around someone who has lost, or they're in a hospital and they're gathering around someone who is suffering, isn't that the Spirit of God right there who is emerging and the light of God is showing right there? It's worth noticing, it's worth seeing, it's worth recognizing, and it's worth embodying. A memory verse, a way of noticing, and then just act accordingly. Advent is a season of lighting candles, and we have to choose it. But what I want to say and want to finish with is this, is that the most important candle that you are going to light this Advent is you. The most significant part of Advent is reigniting this in here, is choosing to believe that this in here is really a rumor of angels. This is really our best clue as to who we are as humans and our best clue into what God is doing. The most important candle is you. Would you pray with me? And in this few moments of silence, to locate that place in your life where you are most aware of the brokenness of this world, the brokenness in your own life, the ache, whether it is cosmic or whether it is deeply personal. What is that place that you can locate this morning? The biggest gap between what should be and what is. Take a few moments and just be there. It is in this place, O God, that we need you most. It is in this place of absence where your presence is most needed. It is in this place of darkness where your light needs to shine. Or rather, the light that you have for us needs to shine in and through us. Let us not be content this year, O God, with just the outward preparations. And Lord, forbid that we would use the outward preparations of this season, as fun as they are, as a way to disengage, as a way to avoid, as a way to escape from the very places and the very reasons that not only you have come, but for which you have sent us. May we live in such ways, O God, may we live in such ways and with such fidelity, with such clarity, with such purity, with such urgency, that we too, from time to time at least, might be confused as people see us. And even though it may look crazy, people might see you, might hear your words, might experience your presence. Through Christ we pray.
Thank you for listening to Voices of Hope. And if you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review us, share with your friends, and we will see you next time.